From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on May 5th on Fulton Avenue in the city of Rochester. A man named Christopher Pate crossed the street and was approached by two Rochester police officers. Pate is a black man who the officers thought matched the description of a different person on their most wanted board. Pate provided his identification and then thought he could just go on with his day. Within moments, officers tased and handcuffed him and punched him in the face repeatedly. Pate was bloodied and apparently left with broken bones. He had committed no crime. Police Chief Michael Simonelli called the actions of the officers a tremendous failure to honor basic rights. Mayor Lovely Warren said the incident hurt her heart. The two officers have been suspended without pay, and the district attorney's office is now investigating. Meanwhile, conversations about police accountability continue. We've seen a number of proposals for how to reform the current system. This hour, it's a chance to better understand that system and the ideas that are out there to change it. And if you're wondering what the process is like, our guests can help elucidate that as well. We've got a couple of members of Rochester City Council, Adam McFadden, back in studio with us. Nice to have you. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thank you.
And Willie Lightfoot as well here. Willie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Frank Liberti, who's the president and CEO of the Center for Dispute Settlement. Frank, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And Ted Forsyth is a member of the Executive Committee for the Police Accountability Board Alliance. And Ted, welcome back to the program to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with the members of City Council. And forgive me, I don't know the answer to this. Have you seen the police body cam video, Adam McFadden?
Yes.
Okay. And Willie, have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. What did you make of the video, Adam?
I'll put it this way. Willie saw more of it than I did. I couldn't get through it. I was one of those people that could not watch the entirety of the footage because it was that upsetting for me.
Willie, you want to describe what you saw?
I can't get into specifics of the video because it has been brought to the DA's office, and they have also the family, Pate family, has filed a notice of claim against the city. And we were in executive session when we viewed that video. However, what I will say is that it was extremely troubling. No one should have to endure and go through that situation. It just brought back some feelings that I had personally, that because I went through some issues with police, 7 years ago. It was disheartening, man. It was troubling. It was sad, man. It was just really, really, really bad and sad. And I think it was embarrassing for everyone in the room.
Now, the officers' names, they've been suspended without pay, Spencer McAvoy and Michael Sipple. And I'm certainly someone who believes in due process for everyone. Councilman McFadden, is there anything that might possibly defend or exonerate these officers?
In my mind, no.
It seems pretty cut and dry. And even the police chief saying so.
Absolutely. I think, one of the reasons why we've argued and put in a camera system, a body camera system, was because we wanted to get the full picture of incidents. When you look at the past, whenever, citizens might have, videotaped officers doing something, we always use the excuse, well, it's just a snapshot. We don't know the entire picture. Well, we know the entire picture given what we saw from the body camera footage.
And there's two officers. My understanding is one of the officers' camera was not on, even though it should have been on, but one of the officers' camera was on. Does that trouble you that one of the officers did not have the camera on?
I'll say this. That's new news to me. I didn't know that wasn't on. There were a number of cameras at the scene.
So. Yeah. Originally, what they said was that both cameras were on. This is what we were told. However, one camera got shut off.
Inadvertently?
And it seemed like we were alluded to believe that it was inadvertently because it hit up against something.
And then it turned back on.
But I wasn't aware that anybody's stuff was turned off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's new if that's the case.
I got you. Okay.
That's why you caught me off guard.
I don't want to allege. And when I say does it trouble you, I'm not alleging that one of the officers intentionally turned it off. But if we're going to have body cameras, we probably need a system to make sure they're going to stay on.
Yeah. Right. From what I remember about that point in the video, I think it was the guy's book bag brushed up against the camera, knocking it off.
Yeah, I'm not alleging that an officer intentionally turned it off.
It wasn't
sort
like
of
a hand came over.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get you there. Okay. And so this investigation will go on with this. I will ask both members of council, what do you think ought to happen with these two officers?
In my mind, I think I'm supporting the mayor's position on this and the chief's position on this, and that's where I'm going to leave it.
So they'll decide, and you'll be comfortable with their decision?
They've decided in terms of the process that they put them through.
Yeah.
Now, by suspending them without pay and initiating, conversations with the district attorney's office in terms of them investigating, I think they've taken the necessary actions.
Okay. And Councilman Lightfoot?
Termination. Termination. That's the word that was used at the press conference, and I stand fully behind that. And I commend the mayor, the chief, for taking the stance that they did.
Council members, do you see this incident as emblematic of the problem, which is rare but still exists and is a problem, or is this not rare?
See, Willie and I have not talked about this. I don't think it's rare. And what I mean by that is, being the former chair of public safety and the types of calls that I would get, the pattern of putting particular charges on people actually started about the time when we were doing Rochester by the numbers, when we had Chief Duffy become mayor, and they were pushing to have accountability through numbers. And so whenever there was interaction with police and young people, you would see these charges like riding a bike without a bell, kids getting arrested in schools for food fights. It was anytime there was an interaction, there were these charges brought up, on people. So for me, there might be a training issue here in a sense that I don't think that part of it is a rarity, that because they've had this interaction, even with my incident at Easton Alexander going back to 2004, I was never there until after the incident. I witnessed a guy with a black eye, and when I said to the lieutenant, who said nothing had happened, well, why did this guy have a black eye? The lieutenant huddled up with his officers. They quickly went over, arrested the guy, and I said, why are you arresting him? They said, because we need to cover our butts. So it's that type of thing. I've witnessed it personally, and I know that it's happened continually in this department, where if there's an interaction, they want to justify the interaction with a charge.
Attorney Mark Foti for Christopher Pate wrote about this exact scenario. And let me go ahead and read what Counselor Foti had to say about this. He says, city court public defenders in the arraignment parts will see a defendant walked out covered in bruises and instinctively know what the charges probably are. Jaywalking, charged as what they call discon/resisting, disorderly conduct with resisting arrest, tacked onto it. And what Foti is saying is, the police can grab a guy like Pate and say, well, he was jaywalking, and then if he wants to continue on, he's not allowed to do that, and we're going to tackle him. And, oh, we broke his face. Sorry, but he shouldn't have been resisting arrest. And Foti is saying, as an attorney, he sees that, and they recognize it as a pattern. Do you agree?
I agree. Just because of the types of calls that I've gotten over the years, I can say that this incident is, in terms of that type of interaction, isn't just with Christopher Pate. It's happened to other people. It's just that this is the first time that we've had a clear picture with a video to support Pate's position. Other times it was just, word versus the word of an officer, which most citizens are not going to win that. But when you have a video supporting the citizen's position, it's a little different. And like I said, I've seen it with my own eyes, and I've taken calls and meetings of people that have gone through the same thing.
Christopher Pate's not going to face charges in this case, by the way, for our listeners.
Well, he didn't do anything.
He didn't, of course.
So
the charges were dropped in court by Judge Dixon.
Right?
He was charged.
He was.
But those have been dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So so that's where we are with this case, and the district attorney's office is investigating. District attorney Sandra Dorley, for example, talked to News 10 NBC's Berkeley Breen and said, you know, I can't really talk about it because it's still ongoing, but she has seen the videos. We reached out to City Hall and the Rochester Police Department about this conversation today multiple times this week, and we're not able to convince someone to come on with us. But we did see the chief, Mike Simonelli, stand up there with the mayor earlier this week and say this was a failure.
Which I'm sure is a tough situation for him because these people are under his command. And he had to face what I would call the music of the actions of these two officers. So I'm sure that wasn't an easy thing for him. But I will say this. We don't pay people for morale. We pay people to be guardians of our citizens. And to that point, we expect people to do the job in that way. For me, I've never given a care about it's a tough job. I know a lot of people with tough jobs. There are people who work in sewer lines. That's a tough job. I wouldn't want to do it. There are people who clean horse stables. Tough job. I wouldn't want to do it. This is a volunteer service. We don't actively draft people to be police officers. They sign up. They go through all of the requirements to become an officer, with the expectation that we're giving them authority to protect and serve. And I think we've lost our way in a sense that we've gotten to the point that because of how we police and how we train folks, that we lost what's at the center of this, which is the community. We've lost that, and we have to gain that back.
Let me talk to Frank and Ted for their perspectives on this, and I don't know. I mean, Ted, I suspect you've got a lot to say about this. Frank, I don't know if you feel like, from your position, can you talk about this particular case?
You understand that under the current legislation, you know, we're restricted from talking about anything specific. But I will say that the Civilian Review Board reviews all cases of excessive force. So
is
let me say that.
This one?
I'm restricted from saying any specific cases, okay?
You.
But what I will say is from just what I heard in the press release and the mayor's statement and the chief of police statement, Willie's statement, if those facts bear out in that fashion, I believe that significant discipline should be issued. And let me be real clear. I think removal is appropriate in that case.
And that's a rare case in this town, isn't it?
For
actual removal of officers.
Removal of officers, there's a lot of incidents where officers have resigned or retired in light of an incident. Yeah.
But what does a lot mean? I mean, how often does that happen, Frank?
You know, anecdotally, probably I see that maybe 3 every 2 years, something like that.
Okay, so or two a year?
Yeah.
If we're averaging it out.
Yeah. And you're asking me to guess, so I really don't.
And I want our listeners to understand who they're hearing in Frank Liberti, who is the president and CEO of the Center for Dispute Settlement.
Yes.
Under the current system, why don't you provide a brief snapshot for our listeners when there is a complaint about an officer's conduct, how it works?
Yeah. So we are an alternate complaint intake site at the Center for Dispute Settlement under city council legislation. We're under contract to affect city council legislation in this. So we're an alternate complaint intake site. We assist people in filing those complaints. We are a neutral third party in that we don't advocate for the complainant, nor do we advocate for the police. We advocate for a fair system. We can ensure the public that their complaint will get a thorough and timely investigation. That's our role. So that complaint under the current system gets investigated by internal affairs of the RPD, a professional standards section. And once that complaint is completed, the three-person civilian panel, who are all city residents, who are all trained neutrals under the auspices of our agency, which is under the auspices of the unified court system, all of the three-person panel of a panel of I think we have 13 panelists right now. Three people are selected on a rotating basis to review those investigations to make sure that they're fair, thorough, and timely. We then make recommendations on our panel findings for each of the allegations in the complaints. And on average, there's 4 or 5 allegations for each complaint.
And when you make recommendations,
they go to the chief.
They go to the chief, but it's the chief's authority. The chief can overrule you, yes?
We make recommended findings for the chief of police under the current legislation. That's correct.
Okay.
And we also make policy and training and investigative recommendations.
Before I ask Ted about, you know, where he sees the process and possible changes, let me ask members of city council. Are you comfortable? I'll start with you, Adam. Are you comfortable with that system right now?
Well, I'll say this. In 2011, we changed the system to the current one that we have now. And before that, the system had some issues that we did address, like the timing of how long it took to get back answers in terms of how cases were founded or unfounded. We've reduced that time. We provided an advocate to sit into the meetings with potential victims or people who brought complaints, and gave them power to be able to stop an interview if they felt it was going in the wrong direction. So there are a number of things that we fixed about the system. And the one thing I do appreciate about the system is that the actual people on the review board actually are citizens of the city of Rochester and are trained mediators. I find that to be, good.
Okay. What's one or two changes you want to see if kind of come to mind first?
I do like the idea of having an independent investigative body. I think, having subpoena power. We've actually looked at that back in 2011. We just didn't have the support for it back then. But there was, there were those of us who thought that would be a good thing. And I do think that there should be a way to discipline officers right now. And the reason why I say that, there are a lot of times where I think that the chief, and not any chief in particular, but the title, wants to keep morale high and doesn't want to fight with the union. And I think that they come down a little soft on discipline or try to figure out a way not to have to discipline someone. And I'd like to take that function completely out of the chief's hand, personally.
Do you think that would be better for the chief? Because then, if there's discipline, then the chief can go to rank and file and say, this is not my call. That's an independent board, and that we stick with their...
Me thinking ahead, there might be unintended consequences from that.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me right now, today, yeah.
Okay. Councilman Lightfoot, how do you want to see changes proceed, to the extent you want to see changes in this?
Well, I think the CDS does some good work. They have trained mediators. I actually have sat in on a case that they asked me to come down and see. So I wanted to see how do they work in conjunction with PSS. But I do understand that the information that they're investigating is only as good as what PSS is giving them, which are the police officers. So I believe in having an independent investigation, or the ability to have an independent investigation is important, I think. I also believe in having a disciplinary matrix that makes sense is also important to have. So I think that there are some areas of improvement, clearly, that we can have in the entire process of a complaint. And even coming down to how you even file a complaint, in my opinion, that's too cumbersome in itself. We're living in a technology day age where everyone has smartphones and things of that nature. People should be able to make a complaint on their phone. Like, it should be that simple. It should be that easy to file a complaint. Not that I have to go to a particular office where I'm intimidated potentially. That's what happened to me. When I was in my situation, I went to file a complaint on Lyle Avenue, and I was somewhat intimidated from filing a complaint. So, because I'm filing it to police officers. So that's intimidating to the public. So I think we have to make filing a complaint simpler, easier, and use technology to its advantage. And there's things of that nature that I think we can incorporate.
So it sounds like there is some agreement, some ideas out there that would be easily kind of grabbed onto. But Ted, you've been one of the more critical voices in our community. You co-authored a report on police accountability and your view of it. We had you on the program last year, Frank as well, mm-hmm. talking about some of the interpretation of statistics and how the process works. How do you see it today? I'm curious to know how you see it in the light of the Pate case. And how the changes are either proceeding or not proceeding as you want them.
This has been an over 50-year issue. the PAB that we're proposing is not...
The Police Accountability Board.
Sorry, yeah. The Police Accountability Board is not a new piece of legislation. In the 1980s, the McCullough Committee, after Alicia McCullough was murdered, was essentially arguing for the same thing. In the 80s and 90s, before the CRB came into being, you had Tilly Gamble, Dr. John Walker, Reverend Raymond Graves, Lewis Stewart, proposing an even more radical idea. They wanted to have complete control over the department. What we're proposing today doesn't even go that far. In light of the Pate case, it was interesting watching the press conference because Chief Simonelli mentioned that, you know, the department had failed, that this was a tremendous failure. And then he went on to say, of two police officers, Councilmember McFadden just said that when he was public safety director 7 years ago, you know, he was getting hundreds of calls, what, a week or something like that?
No, not hundreds a week.
Tens a week. All right.
I got a significant amount of calls.
You didn't? No,
especially when we went to the East-West system and there were these, you know, Rochester by the numbers reports, and there were a lot of what I would call OGA arrests. Mm-hmm. Just didn't make a lot of sense. And it was all because of an interaction with police. There wasn't that a person did anything wrong. It was the interaction which drew the conclusion that they had to put charges on folks and there might have been some physical altercation or verbal altercation.
So the point being, though, that this is not a new thing, and that phrase that he said, that, you know, the tremendous failure of these two officers belies the point that it looks like they're trying to scapegoat Sipple and McAvoy. They should be held accountable. But what about all the other Christopher Pates over the last, you know, 50 plus years? What about all the other tremendous failures? What about all the other failures to protect the people that live in the city? And this is a huge problem, and we're outraged that, you know, Christopher Pate's case is being held up as like, look, we're doing something. It's not enough. This is a systemic issue. It is not about one or two officers. And as much as I want to acknowledge the mayor's action, the police chief's action, I appreciated Mr. Lightfoot getting up there and talking about the Police Accountability Board. Again, this is something that needed to happen like in the 80s, in the 70s, in the 60s, right? I mean, this is a long time coming.
I will say this. This is my issue. The Police Accountability Board can't fix bad leadership. And what I mean by that is if you have a systemic problem with how officers engage citizens, how they see citizens, how we recruit officers, that has nothing to do with the Police Accountability Board. You're talking about an entire system. And so the Police Accountability Board comes into play when an officer does something wrong, but I'm talking about the system in its entirety. So who taught those officers, if they engage somebody, because of that engagement, now I have to put a charge on you? Who taught them that?
But that's
my point. Bad leadership. I'm not talking about one person in particular. I'm talking about the entire system.
Right, but culture. you need to have, it is culture. You need to have a deterrent, though. And you don't have a deterrent.
I would say arresting somebody on TV
is a huge deterrent. And losing your job and you can't feed your family.
Nah, I will say that.
But Benny Juarez got a death sentence. He's been so badly injured that his amputated leg is slowly dying.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that the deterrent could be, you know, hey, your name is in the paper, you're arrested, and you're going to lose your job. And in the past, when we allow people to resign, sometimes they end up in other police departments.
Absolutely. Mm. They should be decertified. They should not be allowed to be officers ever again.
Having this and having the cameras, I really think that they forgot the cameras were on just because of some of the dialogue that was happening. We can't go into any specifics, but to me...
Or they had no respect for leadership.
Yeah.
You know? And they felt like, it gave you an appearance as if this stuff is, to your point, is done all the time. Mm-hmm. That's a culture. And I have to agree. I actually agree with both of you because you're saying it's a long-term systemic issue. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. He's saying, basically, we can't legislate what people do, their morality of how they act and their actions.
Or how they're trained.
Or how they're trained.
From the top down.
That it actually starts from much more than just the police accountability. But your point is that, well, okay, well, here's a deterrent. If you do it, you're going to be accountable. And I think we all agree with that. However, how do we go a little further where how do we stop them from even wanting to do that?
Well, you know? That's right. Part of what we're proposing. There are right. five pillars, right? So we want a city government agency, independent, yep. separate from the Rochester Police Department. Mm-hmm. We want that agency to have independent investigative authority. I think Frank Liberty and CDS do a great job mediating, but that's not investigating. That is not trained investigators, because currently the Civilian Review Board has no investigative authority.
Correct.
So you need to train civilians to do investigations. I think that's a key part. You need subpoena power to bring people in to get evidence, to get witnesses that maybe don't want to talk about or come forward. You need to have disciplinary authority with a disciplinary matrix that everyone agrees to, and we know what the consequences are for my actions. And finally, and this speaks to, I think, the deterrent aspect, the ability of this board will be to evaluate policies, procedures, patterns, and practices. Not just complaints, but they can do it independently of those complaints. And that could lead to changes in departmental policy, training practices. It opens the door for civilians to actually understand how their department works and then make changes so that we can start to address these issues before they become Christopher Pates.
So let me make sure our listeners are clear on a couple of things, because you might be wondering, well, where's this video? The answer is you will see the video,
yes,
my understanding,
at some point.
Once we are...
yes.
Well,
and we want a release. We want a release right now.
But it will be released, my understanding is, once this investigation is completed. Is,
right.
that, is that correct, Frank?
Well, yeah, that's what I understood from the press conference.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. And that's what the members of council understand as well?
Yes.
Okay, because they've had a chance to see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my question about that, though, right? So that investigation has started in May. May 12th, mm-hmm. he made a complaint to CDS. Mm-hmm. Have these officers been on the streets for 3 months with no penalties? Like, the chief and the mayor just came out this week. I don't even remember what
this week,
was.
Yeah.
This week. And said that these officers have been suspended without pay. Well, if you look at Article 75 of New York State law that actually addresses the discipline of officers, 75-3, this is New York State civil service law, it says that officers can be suspended without pay for a total of 30 days. So I think originally maybe the intent was, we'll suspend them for 30 days, we'll figure out if there are charges that we can bring, and then we'll do what we need to do discipline-wise. But these officers have been working for 4 months now. They were just disciplined, suspended without pay.
Okay, so I see our phone ringing, and listeners, if you want to weigh in with questions or comments about process, about proposals, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or if you're calling from Rochester, 263-WXXI. It's 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. I want to be careful to understand the Councilman McFadden's point about leadership, and to kind of put a finer point on what Adam is saying, in that if you are trained that it is appropriate to tase, to tackle, in a situation like the Pate case, and Adam clearly believes, and Councilman Lightfoot believes, that these are not one-offs, that this happens with some regularity, much more so than it should, that it's a question of leadership. Now, you're not calling out the police chief by name, but do you think that leadership problem exists as a culture in the RPD right now?
Absolutely. It's been a while. I'll put it this way. I'll never forget when we had a certain chief, not the current one, and there was a push to have more African-Americans on the, you know, in the police force. That chief ignored the consent decree, didn't even go to get the waiver for the consent decree, which caused us to have a meeting. He told us he couldn't find any, only to find out that they had 20 qualified applicants and they hired none. They hired none. You had 20 that cleared the process, but told us you couldn't find any. So those are the types of things that I'm talking about. When you have a system that takes in very young people, we got to be honest about something. We hire police officers at a very early age, most of them. I can imagine what kind of officer I would have been at 21, to be honest, versus the age I am now. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, I didn't have enough life experience to step into a domestic violence, you know, situation, or to, you know, to know the difference between neighborhoods in a place that I didn't grow up in, or who are the players, all that stuff. So we put a lot on very young people. With that type of responsibility, you have to make sure that you have really good leadership to make sure that they're not taking that authority the wrong way. I mean, if you think about your life at 21, honestly, could you say that you would be mature enough to do that job? 22, 23. I mean, I didn't get what I consider to be mature enough till I had my first child. So that woke me up.
So RPD needs to change its recruiting?
I think we need to be smart about how we recruit, because I've seen them find ways to eliminate good candidates, qualified candidates who live in a city, who represent the population of the city, and make excuses for people who might be potential bad apples because they're related to somebody on the force and their skin complexion is white. I've experienced this. Mm-hmm. And so to me, if you're asking, do I think there's a leadership problem? Yes. If you can find a way to accept potential bad apples because of their skin complexion and who they're related to, and find a way to dismiss good candidates because of their skin complexion, yeah, I would say that's a leadership issue. And that doesn't mean one person. That's throughout the department over time. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've read it in reports. I've had meetings on it. It's not new. It didn't just happen with Simonelli. And I think we've made some progress in terms of recruitment with him. But I will say, we have 750 officers. They didn't just start with Simonelli.
All right, so I want to make clear to listeners as well, we did reach out to the Rochester Police Department this week. The police chief, Michael Simonelli, did appear at a news conference with the mayor on the issue of the Pate case. And we would like to talk to him about these, not just the comments from the councilman, but about these broader issues. And so we'll continue to not only look for that opportunity, but to the chief's credit, he's never said no continually. I mean, he's never sort of ducked a conversation. This is a chief who's had tough conversations, and we hope that he'll come on and respond to some of what we're hearing here, not just from Councilman McFadden, but on these broader issues. So we hope that will happen very soon. And we'll get to your calls in just a second. Let me ask Frank Liberti, you've heard the criticism of the current system from Ted and Barbara's report.
Right.
You've heard these proposals. Is there anything that you're hearing that you think, wait a second, this is not being framed properly? Or do you think these proposals, at least as they're being discussed today, are viable, these changes?
Yes, I think so. And Adam, you as you mentioned earlier, when we went through, and actually it was 2012-13 that we went through that 18-month review of the oversight system, there was a subpoena request that wasn't invoked. The other thing was that at that time, we recommended independent investigations for officer-involved shooting and serious injury cases. Now, that was an idea at that time because of our longstanding agency work in this area that we saw on the forefront. I guess it was an idea before its time, but we've now repeated that recommendation in our current list of recommendations. Another one is to try and address the accountability and transparency, is that our Civilian Review Board findings be allowed to be made public. And the coupled with that is the idea that if any time that the deciding official, in this case, currently it's the chief of police, disagrees with a finding from the civilian panel, he or she would have to articulate that in a public setting, we would suggest at city council meetings. And if there are opportunities for more confidential, city council could go into executive session and challenge the police chief or his or her designee, whoever that deciding official might be. That, I believe, puts the accountability where it belongs, on that deciding official. And you know, quite honestly, our elected representative, two of them are here. You know, the mayor, really, the police chief reports to the mayor. That's our elected official with the opportunity to address any problems in a system that he or she may see, or actually, you know, to terminate someone.
All right, so a couple of things here. Frank, I think the picture you're painting for listeners is one that I want to at least understand how frequent it is. And the kind of picture is this. Let's say that I file a complaint against an officer. I think I was treated unfairly. I was roughed up, whatever the case may be.
Right.
There is an investigation through the current process.
Correct.
And the recommendation is this officer was out of line and there should be some discipline.
No, we don't make disciplinary recommendations, again, under this current system.
Okay.
And that's another proposal.
So it's a finding that you give to the police chief and it's the chief's?
For this allegation of excessive force, we have a finding of either exonerated, the officer was, or sustained, or unprovable or unfounded.
But even if you say sustained, that carries no actual teeth. The police chief gets to decide what I'm going to do with this.
And that's why we're suggesting that any time that the civilian review, the chief or his or her designee disagrees with that finding, they have to articulate that in the public setting.
So in other words, let's say I file a complaint, you guys come back and say sustained, and you give it to the chief, and the chief decides, I'm doing nothing with this.
Right.
If the chief wanted to do nothing after a sustained report, the chief would have to at least in public to counsel explain why.
To counsel.
And right now, the chief does not have to do that.
Correct.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Ted?
It's funny. A lot of these proposals that Mr. Liberty is coming up with are in our proposed ordinance to city council. So.
Yes. We proposed that 6 years ago, actually. But, yeah, Adam,
I've got your letter from 6 years ago here, Frank. So,
yeah, whatever. I actually have the recommendation.
All right, let's forget
here.
Who proposed what when. Yeah. Do we agree on this? Do you agree with that?
I think that the chief needs to be held accountable for his actions right now under the legislation. He has no responsibility to tell anybody anything about why he's deciding what he's deciding. He has too much discretion in the process. I also think that he doesn't just need to come before council.
Can we say he or she? Because we may have a female chief one day.
I was looking at the historical pattern, which is always men, but I agree. Fair. Like, we use they, perhaps?
Yes.
To your point, though, I agree with you. I think the it can't just be the chief comes and tells council why. It needs the other piece of that, which is community control over the disciplinary process.
So even just an explanation wouldn't be enough.
It's not enough. No.
Okay. And Frank, how often does that happen? How often is there a sustained finding and yet no discipline or technically a disagreement from the chief?
Yeah, and that's reported on a regular basis. I don't have that stat in front
but
of me.
But is it often?
But I would think probably maybe a third of the time. There's a disagreement.
A third.
Yeah. And
that's
I'm not talking use of force. We have four classifications of complaints.
That's a lot.
There's
isn't
use
it?
Of force, there are procedural violations, there are courtesy and conduct violations.
Okay, that sounds like a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I don't have expertise in analyzing police misconduct cases across the country. A third of the time, if that's roughly correct, sounds like a lot to me.
And again, let me
not just
say,
on use of
it's,
force.
It's not just on use of force, and it's not just disagreement with a sustained. The panel may find that it's unprovable. And the chief could say is exonerated.
Okay.
Okay. So any of those disagreements are called a disagreement between the panel and the chief.
And council members McFadden and Lightfoot, is there legislation that council is going to be voting on or any changes in the near future on these issues?
Yes. Since last year, President Scott has been leading the efforts to have discussion with police accountability. Board, Alliance, Enough is Enough, Reverend Stewart, and members of the community. An internal working group was put together of President Scott, Vice President Adam McFadden, myself, Deputy Mayor Tim Curtin from Legal, for the CRB process and create a police accountability board. Legislation moving forward, this particular group that was put together, draft legislation that we've circulated to all the council members this week that went out on Wednesday. The press conference was on Tuesday. Council members are asked to provide any comments they have on the legislation. It's important for all the members of council to have time to review this particular draft legislation, which, by the way, we've addressed all 5 points that were presented to us. After council has a time to review the comments and change the legislation if desired, the intent is to share with probably sometime next week with the Police Accountability Board Alliance and the Locust Club. And then we have to start setting up public hearings. We're hoping ideally is to have this in the September legislative packet. Doesn't mean we're going to vote for it on September, but it will be hopefully in the packet. And we're looking to have, I'm sure, exhaust a lot of conversation and comments about. I was in a meeting as today with Phyllis Harmon and some of her folks and Alice White and some of the other advocates on today. And there was some conversation and recommendations that were given even on today. So we are looking forward to hearing everyone's comments and concerns. That legislation is out. It's a draft form. And we're hoping to, we're excited. We're actually proud of to be in the position to be able to do this. We've been working on this for a long time. We thank all of the advocates for helping us and getting to this point. And we're just excited to be able to move this forward once and for all.
All right. Let me get a phone call. This is Bob in Henrietta. Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was involved in the development and founding of Center for Dispute Settlement. It was called something else then. In 1973, I think it was 1973. It was the first in New York and the third in the country. And it came out of Rochester School District racial integration crisis and set up for peacefully resolving conflicts, other conflicts, especially between individuals, but also others. Actually, I personally used the mediation services in a neighborhood dispute, and CDS was great, and issues were resolved. So I don't mean to be other than humble, but I'm very proud of being a part of its founding, and that it's still going after 45 years. Its emphasis from the beginning, and overwhelmingly its emphasis now, and even if you go to the website around police and look at the video, it's on mediation, and that continues. And it's not the kind of fit needed now with police accountabilities. Kudos to Frank and everybody associated with CDS and its real role and expertise and mediation and dispute settlement. But when it comes to police accountability, we really need a change. There's a different kind of role and expertise that's needed. And I really think the one third comment that was made, the accountability board, I think, really needs to have the final say in discipline.
All right, Bob. That's
my comment. I'll get off the phone.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, Bob. Thanks for the phone call and for some of the history and background. Ted, are you comfortable with the proposals you've seen? If you want to see council vote on them tomorrow, do you want to see this pass tomorrow, or do you want to still see changes to this?
I haven't seen anything yet.
You have not seen them?
No.
Okay.
So
are you optimistic?
Mr. Lightfoot just pointed out that their colleagues are looking at it this week, and then we'll probably meet with them next week and see a version.
We should be getting a version to you guys sometime next week, as well as with the Locust Club.
Right.
And then we'll be setting public hearings and going forward from there.
Yeah, I have yet to see them either. I hope I would get a chance
absolutely.
To get away in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And are you optimistic that these proposals look roughly like what you've been working on?
We're pushing for the five pillars. So, again, it's agency of city government separate from the RPD, independent investigative authority, subpoena power, disciplinary matrix with or disciplinary power through a disciplinary matrix, and finally, the ability to review, assess, make recommended changes to patterns, practices, policies, and procedures. My question, Willie,
yes.
Mr. Lightfoot, is there anything, I know you aren't going to disclose.
Yeah, just for sake of the rest of our council, but I will tell
but
you.
I'm curious, is there any legal impediment now after the Harris Beach legal opinion and the city's rebuttal to?
I don't think we're ever going to solve the issue of the Taylor Law and the current bargaining agreement.
Even after
issues,
looking at the Court of Appeals case from 2017?
We got all that information.
Yeah.
We're moving forward.
We're moving forward
with police accountability ordinance. We have addressed all five pillars, and we're moving forward with the full plan. Our intentions is not to be concerned about what happens in court.
Okay.
We're moving forward on the best interest of the
way
people.
Way past that.
Yeah.
We've been past that for months.
We dropped that a long time ago.
Right,
you know what I mean?
I'm glad to hear that.
And
thanks
to President Scott, Vice President McFadden, we all agreed that we were going full blast with this, that we were not going. We've been through several phases of this already.
Yeah.
And look where we are. So we're like, no, we don't want to do that again. So we we think you guys are going to be very proud of what we're doing. We're proud of it.
I'm excited to see what you
and
have.
We're excited, and but we're also going to be open to more comment from the public, comment from the advocates, comment from everybody. We want to get this right, and we're asking people to work with us, help us to create the best police accountability board that we can do. Let's be a model to other cities in the country, and we're standing steadfast on that, man. And I would say that just for the record, you know that we didn't see the video until the 22nd. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And the mayor didn't see it until that Saturday.
By the way, and that's one of Ted's regular complaints is that this happened back
that's
in May.
I want to make that point.
Is there a reason Adam didn't?
Well, no. It's just when the stuff we knew it came across my desk in May. It was sent to another council member. The family reached out, and it went to the chief immediately. So then that's when they started their process. We had no other information about it until after Reverend Stewart had his press conference. Immediately after that press conference, I was a little frustrated because I hadn't got any updates on the situation as far as, you know, I didn't realize it was at this point. And we had body camera footage because, you know, again, I was a new guy, so I wasn't aware of all of that. And so I asked for a full briefing from the police. We got that briefing. Mm-hmm. We watched the video. The mayor watched the video. And then those actions happened afterwards.
So there
were some folks that were out there saying, oh, did they see it a long time ago and were they holding back until they then we released PAB on the same time?
No.
That's not accurate. We had just saw this video. The council saw it on the 22nd. The mayor saw it after we did.
I don't doubt your...
Oh, I'm not doubting that.
No, I haven't heard that in any other news
and in
media.
Some cases,
so I wanted that to be put out.
Whenever there's an open investigation, they only give us limited information unless we specifically request a briefing. But if it was, you know, them looking for a criminal and I said, "Hey, what's going on with this?" They would just say it's an ongoing investigation unless I specifically ask for a briefing. But other than that, you know, when there's an ongoing investigation, we don't get details to anything unless we request it.
But just to make sure I understand that, because one of Ted's complaints here is May 5th was the date that Christopher Pate got roughed up.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later is when Reverend Stewart had that news conference. Mm-hmm. And now it's 3 weeks after that. And we're just this week hearing from the police chief, from the mayor's office. Right. And what Ted is saying is that's too long for justice. And I don't think anybody is saying.
If it's as clear as day.
No,
as
we agree.
Say.
Okay. Nobody wants counsel to adjudicate every instance.
And it's complicated.
But let me say that, you know, we've been working closely with Reverend Stewart over the last couple of years and working jointly with his group. What you're seeing is actually what we've asked for actually over 10 years, is council getting more directly involved with the program that they oversee. And what you'll notice is, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, is council's involvement in several high-profile cases recently have led to, I think, appropriate resolution. I think that, you know, we as an oversight agency under their legislation have asked for that. I think what we're seeing now, and I'm really excited about it, is really council getting involved. That's where the political pressure comes. And Ted, I know Ted and I approach, we were looking for the same thing. We just approach it from different perspectives. You know, what your five pillars are, we've had those recommendations out there, and we support those recommendations. So we're not so far apart. Where we're apart is the approach. You know, and I think correct me if I'm mischaracterizing. Yeah. There's two, in my opinion, there's two ways to approach oversight for law enforcement. One is a watchdog approach, where you know you as a watchdog agency have a deterrent effect on the actions of police officers. The Center for Dispute Settlement, I think, Bob alluded to that. We're an agency birthed out of the civil rights movement and this community discord that was going on with the school busing issue back in the 70s. We are deeply involved in that work currently today. The work we do for oversight and law enforcement is just one little part of the work we do in community building. So we approach it from a different perspective. What we do is, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody today, we're living in a very divisive country that's reflected locally. From my perspective, I think a watchdog approach is a way to further divide an already divisive community. We work to build bridges between the community and the police.
Why would it be divisive to have a watchdog or a police accountability board?
I'm not a police accountability, but a watchdog with an anti-police bias, I think, alienates the police from the community.
Do you think Ted has an anti-police bias?
Candidly, yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at your information on the website.
Frank
yeah.
has a pro-police bias, quite frankly.
So. Well, well, that's where I just.
I mean, look at this. 41 years of CDS, and these recommendations have not moved an inch under the tenure of CDS.
I
77 to 92 was the CIC, and nothing changed there.
No, 92 and Adam
and 92
and,
to
Adam,
now.
Adam,
26
no,
years.
No, that's incorrect.
No, well, we did make recommendations in 2013 and implement those changes into the process.
And the community Frank advocate isn't an advocate. What? It's.
Hold on.
It's a misnomer.
Frank
right?
is right when he says that they put investigative power on the table and independence on it. They did do that.
We there were ahead
was
of
not,
our time.
There
that's
was
all.
Not support.
But there were also
that.
Community groups pushing for that. There were
no,
other people
we
at the table.
That,
yes, there were.
We brought that forward.
I've seen the documentation.
I have the documentation.
I
here.
Have the documentation too. Okay. Okay.
Well, I mean,
fortunately,
I have it.
I'll just say,
I got papers.
I was involved
there leading
at that time.
It. Frank is right that they brought that to the table. I was there leading it. I can't sit here and say he didn't do it when I know he did.
No, okay.
I'm sure he did.
But
yeah.
but I have to at least ask the members of council, and we're down to our last 30 seconds, because what I actually think Ted and Frank, I think people want the same things. I think bias is hard to recognize. One person at the table thinks the other may have a bias in one direction and one in another. I've got biases. We all do. Do you suspect, as members of council, that CDS has a pro-police bias?
No. I'll say this. The system we have in place does not help their cause, but I don't think it's a pro-police bias.
And that's why we're so excited. And have to thank Ted and his group for keeping this item on focus, and also Reverend Stewart and his group for keeping the focus on it. We're now at a point where we can really make significant changes.
10 seconds. Is there a bias?
No, I hope to see ways that we can work together.
Well,
all of us can work yeah. together.
We are within days of actually seeing publicly some of
yes,
these proposals, correct?
Absolutely.
Next week?
Yes.
All right.
PABnow.com.
No, do it slower. Let people
right,
hear
yeah.
it again. Do it.
Go to PABnow.com and find out how you can act and get this thing passed.
Okay. And so the five pillars that Ted's talked about, you'll see there, PABnow.com.
And you can see our recommendations at CDSADR.org.
CDSADR.org.
Our recommendations are included in our annual reports.
This is going to be hard. Let's continue to have these discussions. Thanks to all of you for
Thank
being
you.
Here. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
you.
Everyone. More connections coming up.